I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Oh, I win. Google me.
We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger down here.
What do you think about and saying this? So Deion Sanders was at Big 12 Media Day.
If Deion was at the podium and you're there and you have to ask a question, how are you addressing him?
Coach Prime.
Okay. I'm not doing that.
I'm saying Deion, Coach Sanders.
I can't call him Coach Prime. I'm sorry.
Mr. Sanders.
Coach.
Coach? Yeah, Coach is fine.
Coach. I'm not calling you Coach Prime. I'm sorry. If you have to reject my question, embarrass me, do it. I'm not doing that.
So the Big 12 is leading the charge on a lot of things, and we will get to some of those here in the college football kegger on 105.3 The Fan. But Deion was up at the podium with Sonny Dykes was there from TCU at the same time. And a lot of the coaches up at the podium talking about the NIL, and Deion had his take on what they should do with that name, image, likeness, and the payouts to the players.
I wish it was a cap. You know, like, the top of the line player makes this. And if you're not that type of guy, you know you're not going to make that. That's what the NFL does. So the problem is you got a guy that's not that darn good, but he could go to another school and they give him $500,000. And you can't compete with that. That don't make sense. And you're talking about equality. Equality. And all you have to do is look at the playoffs and see what those teams spent. And you understand darn near why they're in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to compete with somebody who's giving $25, $30 million to a darn freshman class.
Right.
It's crazy. We're not complaining because all these coaches up here could coach their butts off and give them the right opportunity with the right players and play here and there, you'll be there. But it's what's going on right now don't make sense. And we want to say stuff, but we're trying to be professional. But you're going to see the same teams darn near at the end and with somebody who sneaks up in there. But the team that pays the most is going to be there in it.
All right, so I was actually surprised he said this.
Yeah, imagine Deion the player.
Right.
And his reaction towards opposition to a free market. And
right.
Getting everything you can.
Yeah, I mean, Deion played most of his career, at least half of it, in an uncapped league. Cap came out, what, 95? 94, 95? And Deion played, you know, he played 6 years before then? Probably 6 years after? So, like, he played half of his career in an uncapped league. And he also played Major League Baseball, which, exclusive, is an uncapped sport.
And he would not be saying this as the head coach of the Longhorns.
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so.
Because they'd be spending, or the head coach at A&M.
Yeah, because, like, at the end of the day, without a union, they're never going to get a cap because all the players have to do is say, no, we don't agree to this, and this is hurting our market. This is not a free market, and you guys are trying to, you know, cap salaries, you know, fix wages, and that's just not something that's going to work. Now, if they get a union, like the NFL union, players union, like they agree to the salary cap, so there you go. But I don't know, man. Like, this is a very odd thing for Deion to say. Like,
well, it's not an odd thing for him to say, really, because that would help him.
It would help him, but it's an odd thing for him to say because he was also a player.
Yeah, but now he's a coach.
Yeah.
And he'll say, okay, I was a player then, I'm a coach now. And it is in Deion's best interest. Mm-hmm. But forget all that. What do we think of the concept just in general to try to corral this thing? I'm glad Bobby's out for this. You can't have an NIL discussion with Bobby because he said you were too late. You know, the cat's out of the bag. So now that, you know, the cat's out of the bag, there's no point in trying to set up rules in order to have guidelines to restrain it. So I'm glad Bobby is out for this conversation. But it does need to settle down somehow.
It does. Yeah, it does. Like, to me, the NIL is the issue. It's the portal. That's the issue. Like, the NIL is, you know,
Why is the portal the issue over teams with deeper pockets outspending you to win?
It's just like, you know, teams that happen to have better geography have a better chance of winning. Like, if money was the same, the University of Texas would still have an advantage over Missouri. Because more people live in Texas, more students want to play close to home. You're going to have an advantage regardless. But yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, if
Deion is saying, take the top five teams from last year, and they'll be the top five spenders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to continue to be the case. So schools like us never have a real true shot. That's his point.
And look, there's some fairness to that. Yeah. So yeah,
more often than not, that's the way it's going to end up.
Yeah, and there's going to be some kind of cap, and I have no problem with that.
Is there?
I think there is.
Who's gonna? You just said there's no union. Like,
I think they're going to make them employees. I think that that's the step. You make them employees, and then you allow them to unionize, and then there's a cap. And the cap would be different. The cap would be not per, like, on a player's salary. So what you would say is the school would have $20 million to spend per year. All right? Each player can make whatever they can make, and they can go somewhere else and make more. But each school only has a pool, right? A pool of money to spend. So I think that's how they would do it, but who knows, right?
And apparently Texas Tech is becoming a player in this. Some yes. former offensive lineman mm-hmm. who is spending big.
This offensive lineman went years ago, and he became like basically became landman. He really became landman. And, you know, now they've got a ton. I think it's called the Marauder Club, Matador Club. They got a ton of money, and they really helped Texas Tech softball get to the final game or the final series. They really helped that, and they've helped them create a really good team to where they're a top 15 legitimate playoff contender in college football. So they are also a part of Big 12 Media Days. And one thing that you are going to see this week, or maybe not see, is a preseason poll. And I love this. They are nixing the preseason poll. They want to help usher in a new era where nobody puts out preseason polls. Arizona State was picked dead last in the Big 12 last year. Dead last. And they go to the playoff. And it's their contention. And Brett Yormark said it's our contention that these things skew the rest of the poll. And you have no idea the way turnover is, the way the portal is. You have no idea how good or bad someone's going to be. It's very difficult once a precedent is set. Once you put the team at 14 and the other team is number 16
yeah.
and they all keep winning, even if 16 is clearly better than 14, it's very hard to jump. It's very hard to jump.
I thought you were going to say the preseason ranking that's inaccurate hurts transfers from going to you. Because they're like, oh, you're 16.
Yeah. It might.
And Arizona State wasn't 16.
Right. And it might hurt you. Because
those kids are going to have that in their mind sure. of this program is ranked there.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, though. Like, the portal. Yeah. If you have an opportunity to go and you already have a kind of a preconceived notion
yeah.
on where you are. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. So that's one thing the Big 12 is trying to do. I'm a big supporter of this. I think that it's time. Like, there was a time for preseason polls, right? And they're good for some discussion.
Yeah.
But what do you get out of it? 24 hours of the preseason poll? You get a little bragging rights. It's a little bit. Not much. So that's that. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark also saying, I am in favor of the 5+11 model, which is each of the four power conferences and the one group of five get one automatic bid, and the rest of the 11 for the playoff all are at large. He is joining the SEC and the ACC, who want that. The Big Ten wants the 4-4-2-2-1-3 model, where the Big Ten and the SEC get a guaranteed four teams, and there's only a couple of at large. I like this way better, the 5+11. Just put the five conference champs in, and then give me the rest as the 11 at large teams. Two local coaches are on the hot seat. The number one hot seat in the Big 12, of a local team, is Brett Venables at Oklahoma. That is the number one hot seat, according to CBS. Basically, it's like, it's now or never for you. There's another one, though, right up the road from him, and that is Mike Gundy, who is on one of the more hotter seats out there. They come off a 3-9 season. And when T. Boone Pickens passed away, that was really his number one sponsor. And he doesn't have that anymore. And that's a problem for him. I don't know that Oklahoma State necessarily wants to get rid of him.
Right.
He just doesn't have the sponsor anymore because he is perfect for that school.
But T. Boone passed away in 2019.
Yeah.
So
now but you know, to be fair to Gundy, he had a good year, what, 2 years ago? 2 or 3 years ago. They had a really, really good year. So that was something that kept him afloat.
He's gone 3-9. I'll go in reverse order. 10-4, 7-6, 12-2, 8-3, 8-5.
Yeah. So the 12-2, the 10-4, kind of saved. You get a double-digit win. You're not getting fired usually with double-digit wins unless you're at, like, Alabama.
The big question is, what should Oklahoma State be and what can they be when you look at some of the other programs in college football who have risen? Like, what should Oak State be?
Post-T-Boone, I don't know. With him and the money, they could be basically Texas Tech, what Texas Tech is doing this year. You know, where they're Texas Tech's going to be a playoff contender.
I mean, you think of Oak State or Texas Tech as a better program overall?
Oak State, I think.
So that's what I'm saying. When you say they can be Texas Tech, like, some would argue they are and are already better.
Meh. I guess Tech has had, Tech had their run, but Oak State's done it with multiple coaches. Tech really has done it. Yeah, they did it with Leach.
What do you think, Pepe? Oak State's ceiling. You've lived here your whole life.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there. Tech has been one of those teams, though, for a while. It's been like, you know, with Joey McGuire, that they've been on the come up, kind of like they're waiting to be there. And finally, they have the NIL, because they've always been like a hype team. You know, it's like, okay, Texas, no, you leave the Big 12. Now this is our team to run. You know, I think Joey McGuire said a couple years ago, the Big 12 runs through Lubbock. So, I mean, they're on the come up there. OK State has had their chances for a while. They were in that, you know, Big 12 championship game against Baylor. They got stopped at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
That was for a playoff berth. They've been right there to be a playoff team, and they just come up short. But I would think the ceiling is it's high for OK State.
It's their ceiling is
saying OK State. I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Yeah, I've never heard that either.
Oak State.
OK State.
OK State. But to each their own, I guess. You probably say baseball. They're losing 0-3. Probably do that same
thing. The series. They're down 0-3.
Yeah.
They're down 1-2 in the series. That's right. That's what you would say. I think the programs are generally like kind of similar. But it's tough post-T-Boone, man. Like, where's that money going? Do his kids, his family have the same desire to spend like he did? He got them great facilities, but he's no longer around.
It's the College Kegger with Big 12 Media Days taking place here on Sean and RJ. Bobby Bell out on vacation. It's DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. The commercial-free expressway is next. A Rangers-Tigers ticket giveaway. We may now have better baseball tickets to give away the rest of the season than Rangers-Tigers and Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. He wanted more time, so we put him in the commercial-free expressway. Florio joins us on Sean and RJ next. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, usually joins us at 8 o'clock, but he said he's got some free time, so we're going to put him on even longer in the commercial-free expressway on the home of the Dallas Cowboys with Sean and RJ. Cowboys insider Bobby Belt is out on vacation. I asked Florio for the Zoom. He said 7:20 was too early to put on his toupee.
No way.
Yeah. You couldn't tell that was a toupee?
I thought it was great hair.
No.
Oh,
he
man.
He went to the Marv Albert. No, it's great hair. It's great hair, right, Mike?
You know, that was an off-the-record conversation.
Oh,
you want me to share all of the texts that you send me?
Wow. No, I'm sorry. I retracted. Dump that, Peyton. We got an 8-second delay, Mike.
Wow.
I offered to do it. You know, I was just kidding. My wife gets upset when I joke about having a toupee. And frankly, my real hair, like, the older I get, the faster it grows. And there's more and more gray in there now, so it's getting unruly and wiry. I'm going to end up looking like Albert Einstein before too long.
RJ is just sitting here grinding his teeth that you said the older you get, the more it grows.
Yeah.
The rest of my show is bald in here, except for me.
Like a Chia pet.
Yeah. We got collusion and lawsuits everywhere. We got NFL, NFLPA. And then I see on the website, ProFootballTalk.com, Jerry Jones has to pay $1.5 million. Which collusion should we start with?
Well, and it's not Jerry that has to pay it. It's Legends Hospitality, which he co-founded some 17 years ago with the Yankees. He still owns a stake in it. Sixth Street Partners bought the majority interest. They're a private equity fund 4 years ago. But it's an example of what the Department of Justice Antitrust Division can do if a group of companies that may or may not be violating the antitrust laws lands on the radar screen. In this collusion case that came to light now 16 days ago with the 61-page ruling that Pablo Torre unearthed. He and I had a friendly competition as to which one could get it first, and he did, and I'm glad he did, because it really sheds a light on how the NFL does business. The NFL could end up on the DOJ's radar screen. The NFL could be investigated for all forms of antitrust and collusion. So the Jerry Jones thing is just an example, a very tangible example of what happens if the government decides to sink its teeth into a situation like this. And the NFL may have some situations that the Department of Justice may want to take a look at.
Break down for us in very simple terms, Sean and RJ terms. You know how simple that needs to be, because I feel like I want to be outraged over the NFL collusion story. I just need to make sure I'm understanding it fully on who conspired, who's guilty, and how they can be punished, and if they're going to be punished. Because the regular NFL fan, number one, do they care? You can judge that by traffic on your website, I'm sure. And number two, is the NFL just going to continue to be untouchable?
Here's the breakdown, and I'll make it as simple as possible. It goes all the way back to 2011. That was the first time the NFLPA tried to get fully guaranteed contracts for all players through the collective bargaining that happens at the high level between the union and the league. They tried in 2011. They didn't get it. They tried again in 2020. They didn't get fully guaranteed contracts for all players. 2 years later, the Browns decide to give Deshaun Watson a five-year fully guaranteed deal. That was in March of 2022. And that, I believe, based upon everything that's in the 61-page ruling, it set off a fire alarm at 345 Park Avenue. And it prompted the league, in advance of a league annual meeting happening just a couple of weeks after the Watson deal was signed, to plan to tell the owners, hey, you got to watch it with the fully guaranteed contracts. And I think the league didn't want to lose on a piecemeal basis what it had been able to keep through collective bargaining. We've managed to fight off fully guaranteed contracts when the union tries to get them for all players. Let's not start giving these things out one by one to the players. We're going to lose indirectly the thing that we've managed to keep through collective bargaining.
Yep.
So the collusion grievance resulted in a ruling that the NFL's management council, with the blessing of the commissioner, urge teams to collude when it comes to guaranteed contracts. That's huge. That's massive. Even though the arbitrator declined to go the rest of the way and find evidence of actual collusion, and I think the arbitrator just chose to ignore or explain away evidence of actual collusion, that ruling that the NFL and the management council, with the blessing of the commissioner, said to the teams, do this, collude, that's huge. And the fact that the NFLPA took that ruling and stuck it in a drawer and hid it for months, that's inexcusable.
Why would they want – why? That's what we were trying to figure out last hour. Why would the NFLPA want to hurt the players getting guaranteed deals?
Well, it makes no sense. And this thing could have been used in this adversarial relationship with the league in a bunch of different ways, a PR campaign – take it to the DOJ's antitrust division, demand that the commissioner resign, put pressure on the league. You're supposed to be fighting with the league all the time. And one of the theories is Lloyd Howell, the current executive director, has sold himself as a guy who knows how to get deals done without fighting. This collusion grievance is a leftover from his predecessor's tenure. D. Smith was a litigator. He was a fighter. He was an assistant U.S. attorney. He's been a prosecutor. He fought the NFL. And the argument is these lawsuits cost too much money. And the report from ESPN yesterday was that Lloyd Howell painted this thing as a loss, not a partial win, that had some mileage to it, to the NFLPA executive committee. And he blamed D. Smith for wasting a bunch of money by pursuing the thing. So the thinking is it was downplayed because it advances this idea that Lloyd is the compromise choice who knows how to get things done and who isn't going to have all of these fights that he launches that cost a lot of money. Now, beyond that, and the report that came out this morning that Lloyd Howell has a side hustle with the Carlyle Group, part-time consultant, a private equity fund that's been approved to buy minority shares of NFL teams. you know, you start wondering what the hell's really going on here. And I joked when he got hired that he was a Manchurian candidate. Hell, I don't know that it's a joke anymore. Mm. I don't know what's going on, but I think the NFLPA player leadership needs to wake up and look into this situation, because they may need to get themselves a new executive director.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. We had a former Major League Baseball player, Mike Bacsik, in our midday show for a long time, and he said, it's not even close, that the NFL has the worst players association. I'm sure you don't have the, you know, intimate details of every other league and the way they go about it, but do you think that's a fair statement, Mike, that the NFLPA is pretty weak and has gotten beaten down for decades?
Well, here's the problem. And this goes back to the strike in 1987 that held together for a few weeks, and then players started to cross the picket lines. And then in 2011, the lockout. The lockout ended just as it was time for players to miss game checks when the preseason was getting started. NFL players have short careers. NFL players want to play football. NFL players want to get paid to play football. They need the money that comes from playing football. NFL owners have enough money to shut the sport down for a year. When the nuclear option in collective bargaining of a work stoppage, when one side will do it and one side won't, that creates an imbalance. And there's an apathy that the NFL players have shown. They're not interested. They're not engaged, because at the end of the day, they're going to take the best deal and they're going to play football. Don't drag me down with details, because at the end of the day, we're doing the best deal. And I think the league has weaponized that apathy against the players for years. And I think that over the past couple of years, the way that Lloyd Howell was selected with this top secret process, there was no transparency. There was just a lot of weird things that happened. I feel like NFLPA leadership has been weaponizing the apathy against the players as well. And the challenge for the players is to wake up and take charge of their union. They're never going to have a chance to fight the NFL if they can't take control of their union and ensure that the people who are in charge of the union are willing to fight the NFL.
Mike, we've always said they should go on strike week 17. They get their whole year of game checks, and then the owners lose what's most important to them, which is playoff game checks, playoff gates, because they don't have to share as much of that with the players. Is that something they would ever consider doing, or do they care too much about the playoffs? They're too selfish with that.
Well, okay, here's how we play that out. Because we're in an era now when the collective bargaining agreement expires. There's two ways it can go. The players can operate without a contract and go on strike whenever they choose to go on strike, which under your suggestion, and it would be a good one, you go on strike at the end of the regular season and you leave the owners high and dry when the postseason rolls around. Before we even get to that point, though, the owners have to not lock the players out. What they did in 2011 was they locked the players out until the players said uncle and took the best deal that was on the table in August of 2011. In 2020, you know, it was a close vote on whether or not to approve the CBA that would have had 17, that moved to 17 regular season games and so, yada, yada. Hey, if the CBA would have expired, the owners would have locked him out. And the owners very well might have shut down the NFL for all of the 2020 season because of the pandemic, and they would have had a hard time coming up with a good deal. So the owners, I think, long before the players would ever have a chance to strike in week 17, the owners will lock the players out and say, here's your best deal. And the commissioner said some things back in May that made me think they're plotting something that's going to change the way the money gets divided. Because right now it's 50-50. As that number gets bigger and bigger, 50-50 is a lot to give the players. We can pay them less than 50-50 of this unlimited billions that we're getting every year. I think that the apathy is going to be further weaponized against the players the next time around. And that's why it's critical the players have someone in place who will devote his or her life to fighting the league at every turn, with no conflict of interest, with no side job, with nothing but an unrelenting passion and desire to get the best deal possible for the players and get the players into the mindset that they need to be in, that sometimes you got to stand up and you got to fight. Even if you may have to give up a year of your NFL career, you've got to be willing to fight. And that's not an easy thing to do, because that apathy is baked in 38 years now and counting.
Football Night in America, ProFootballTalk.com, book author, which we're going to get to here in a minute, Mike Florio on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan.
You better get to it or I'll go on strike.
Why aren't you working? Well, what's up with your regular hours? It sounds like you've already gone on strike.
Well, no, trust me. We have a hiatus every year in the slow time.
Yeah.
That begins middle of June and lasts until right about the time training camp opens. This year it's 6 weeks, excuse me. The problem is I do a podcast every day that's 45 minutes long that's just me. So 2 hours with Chris Sims or one hour roughly just me, six of one, half dozen of the other. So I'm still working every day. And the slow time's always busier.
Yeah.
There is no slow time.
Yeah.
This collusion thing has consumed my life for the last 2.5 weeks. So I'm not on strike. And
Mike,
I'm not getting paid extra for working on vacation. Maybe I need to go on strike with NBC.
Mike, are you finding that readers care about it?
They care about it more than I thought they would. What was disappointing was that the usual suspects who cover the NFL buried their heads in the sand because they didn't want to touch it.
Yeah.
Because they know nothing good is going to come of it for them. And I understand it. That idea that I got a mortgage to pay, I got mouth to feed, that goes a long way toward justifying a lot of things that, in theory, you would prefer people not do. I was very encouraged by the reporting yesterday and today from Don Van Natta Jr. and Kalen Kaler of ESPN. You know, and that's the thing. When you have a place like ESPN, you have certain reporters who don't rely on that relationship with the teams, relationship with the league, relationship with the union. Because the thing that's been very difficult is to get agents to speak out, to get players to say anything. Everybody's afraid. Everybody's afraid of reprisals and repercussions. And it's unfortunate. It's sad. And I'm just fortunate and grateful that I'm in a position where I built my platform, I own my platform, and I don't have to worry about that crap. So it's good to see others who are in a position where they're confident enough that they don't have to worry about the reprisals and they can advance this story, because this is one of those things that I think the deeper you go, the uglier it is. And I think that where we are right now, there's going to be some significant ramifications, and people do care about this more than I thought they would. And that part of it's refreshing.
Mike, Kevontae Turpin, 97 and a 70 with a gun and a couple of ounces of marijuana. I'm a proponent of I only break one law at a time. What is the NFL going to do here? What is their take on this?
Well, the substance abuse policy essentially decriminalized marijuana 5 years ago. You have to really try to get suspended for any type of marijuana, positive test, violation of possession, whatever. So if it was DUI, he'd have a problem. There was DeMarcus Robinson pleaded no contest recently to a DUI charge. He's going to get suspended 3 games, period. They don't mess around with DUI. With marijuana, they don't care anymore. You have to basically defy the testing protocol and the treatment program to get yourself suspended. The weapons thing, I'd have to go back and research that again, which is a lawyer's way of saying I don't know. I really don't know off the top of my head what the potential consequences would be under the weapons policy. But my vague recollection is there's plenty of weapons incidents, not plenty, but they happen from time to time. I don't remember a lot of suspensions over weapons incidents. I think it's easier to navigate your way around a suspension through what you plead to and how you resolve the criminal charges than it is for a DUI. For a DUI, there's no way around it. You plead guilty to anything related to that alcohol charge, you're getting suspended.
The other day, we went through your NFC contenders list from ProFootballTalk.com, and it had the Eagles, Lions, Rams, San Fran,
ew,
the Commanders, maybe the Bucks, maybe the Vikings, and then the list just ended. Where are the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, the question came up, what do I think of a possible Bills-Rams Super Bowl? And that's when I addressed the idea that in any given year, there are 10 or 12 teams that have a realistic chance of winning the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean the other teams have no chance. You know, I made the mistake of saying in 2021, the Bengals have no chance to make the playoffs, and they made it to the Super Bowl. In 2023, the Texans have no chance to make the playoffs. They made it to the Final Eight. Teams that aren't on that radar screen when the season begins can play their way into it. But look at where we are right now. You know, Pete Rozelle hated the 70s because there was no parity, and we thought we got to a point where there's true parity and everyone has a chance. And now you've got teams that have cracked the code and they have franchise quarterbacks, and they're always in the mix. And there's other teams that can't get into the mix. So I want some variety. I'd like to see the Cowboys get back to the NFC Championship for the first time since 1995. I mean, you know, it's always the same teams now. It's the Chiefs. Since Patrick Mahomes became the starter in 2018, the worst the Chiefs have done is lose in overtime in the NFC Championship.
Oh,
that's the floor. So, you know, yeah, I'd like to see it get mixed up. I'd like the Ravens to get to a Super Bowl. I'd like the Bills to get to a Super Bowl. I'd like to see the Steelers, you know, shock the AFC and climb to the top of the mountain, which I don't think they'll do. I'd like to see the Cowboys have it all fall together. And I think, you know, hey, look, I think this George Pickens thing could work out. I'm fascinated by that because everything Dak Prescott said about him is accurate. He's open when he's not open, and he gets open a lot. The Steelers just didn't use him properly. If the Cowboys use him properly, that offense could be better, the Cowboys could be better, and who knows how it's going to play out. But as of right now, is it stunning to think that the Cowboys aren't in the same class as the Eagles, the Commanders, the Lions, the 49ers, and the Rams? Is that, I mean, is that really a hot take?
No, it's not a hot take, unfortunately. All right. Are the Commanders laying the groundwork for a return to the Redskins?
And, you know, I say this without regard to whether they should have changed their name. I believe they should. This is without regard to whether they should change back. And you've got the president saying basically they never should have changed and they should change back. I'm just looking at what they're doing. And they are just dancing around the old name and the old logo. Those uniforms they came out with yesterday, first of all, they drop a video with highlights from the 80s with the old logo visible when they've been shying away from showing the old logo ever on social media. They went in with both feet yesterday, and every image they show of these throwback uniforms, they have the helmet at an angle where you can't see the logo on the side, and it looks like the old uniforms. And when you've got the president saying you never should have changed your name, and they're possibly going to have to go to the president to get him to get D.C. Council to approve the investment in the stadium they want to build, hey, if he says, I want you to go back to your old name, and deep down they kind of want to go back to their old name, I mean, I can't rule out them going back to their old name. Hey, Dan Snyder said he'd never change the name. And he said that in 2013, and 7 years later he did.
Yeah.
Josh Harris has said they're not going back to the old name. I mean, I feel like they're flirting with it, they're dancing around it, and they're laying the foundation to do it if the dominoes fall in a way that they need to do it to get the president to push for this stadium in D.C. on the timetable they want. And I think if they have to do it, maybe at some level they'll be happy they did have to do it.
Mike Florio celebrating 25 years at ProFootballTalk.com. I was really interested in reading the recap of how it started, how it almost fell apart, and how it's been going all the way up to Football Night in America. And in that, I thought that this father of mine and, you know, writing on the side thing was just like a little minor hobby. And it's sounding like this is something that could be major with the latest thing that you also have coming out. So talk about 25 years and explain to our audience what is the big shield.
Hey, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that. First of all, it's 25 years of me stumbling into the business. The 25-year, the silver anniversary of PFT is coming up November 1, 2026. So I'm going to milk this 25-year thing as many times as I possibly can. This is 25 years of me sending in a writing sample to a website that didn't pay me, but I knew the moment that they hired me that something's going to happen here, even though it took years before I actually, you know, made any real money from it. But 5 years ago, I started screwing around with fiction, and we've done Father of Mine, we've done Son of Mine, On Our Way Home, Christmas / Ghost Story that's out there. But I've got a stack of like seven other manuscripts because I just keep writing at night when I'm done doing my PFT stuff. And because I've gotten very adept at typing and thinking quickly, I've just been cranking it out. So Big Shield is a cautionary tale on gambling, the mob, and professional football, but not not the National Football League, wink, nod, officially not. No team names used. NFL, not used. Just cities that coincidentally are hosting teams in the fictional professional football league. But, you know, I've been very concerned about how a gambling scandal could affect the NFL since the Supreme Court opened the floodgates for state-by-state legalized sports betting. And, you know, instead of waiting for the real story to happen that could hurt the NFL's image and impair fan trust in the integrity of the game, and I already hear, and you guys hear it all the time, it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. It's not rigged. But I'm already hearing it's rigged without a scandal. So I tried to envision the scandal that could happen and put it out there as a warning to the NFL to get its house in order and as a warning to the players who might be tempted to cash in on the inside information that they have. And that's really the gist of where the scandal comes from. A guy who is turning his access to inside information both before games and during games into money, ties to the mob, can't get out, and it all kind of goes from there.
Wow. Big Shield now available for pre-order. Choppy, that's right down your alley,
yeah,
being
is.
The degenerate that you are. And the ebook can be pre-ordered, for the low price of 99 cents.
The ebook would
really
be right up my alley.
Stupid. You know what? I am stupid to sell those for 99 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, because number one, they're objectively good. And number two, you look up what ebooks cost. They're at least like $7, $8, $9 each. It's just stupid that I did that. But I'm trying to encourage reading as something that we enjoy. I remember being in school and they forced us to read books and I hated it. And when I discovered reading as something that's enjoyable as an adult, it's like, hey, this is pretty good. So for 99 cents, you can discover reading as something enjoyable, assuming you guys can read. I'm not so sure as to one of you, and I'm not going to say which one.
Thank you, Michael. Congratulations on the legendary run, and we'll continue to push the Big Shield on all the socials. Thank you, boss.
Thanks, guys.
Our boy, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, Football Night in America. Let's hook you up right now for turning it on, leaving it on.
All right, Tolos, that's right. Right now, call on number 10 at 877-881-1053. Wins a four-pack of tickets to see your Texas Rangers take on the Detroit Tigers at Globe Life Field in Arlington on Friday, July 18th. And Tolos, you want to be one of the first 15,000 fans in the ballpark to also get a pickleball paddle. That's call number 10 at 877-881-1053.
Diamond Cavs, did a two-time batting champion just become available for the Texas Rangers to pick up? Choppy will have that on your home of your favorite baseball team. But right now, we will transition on over to the G-Bag Nation. Because speaking of baseball, the other day I was driving around. I was driving, going to pick up the kids from school.
Well.
And Brian Broaddus was asking a question to Jared Sandler. It was Brian's turn. And instead of a question, he just gave him an amazing compliment.
Okay.
Just like, great job breaking down the game, breaking down the sport. Well, this time, Pepe, he actually did ask a question.
He did. Now, look, we've played clips like this before, mainly from the G-Bag Nation. These long-winded questions. Eric was a victim a couple years ago asking Stephen Jones about a minute and a half long question. And we could play that again to kind of compare to this one. But Tolos, I want to get out your stopwatches, your phones, and time this question from Brian Broaddus to Jared Sandler.
Hey, Jared, maybe it's me just kind of thinking this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but you're there every night, and I listen to you every night with the broadcast. Are the Rangers having problems with the bottom of opponents' lineups of getting those guys out?
Yeah, well, last night they did.
I mean, I know it's probably a weird question to ask, but why do I feel like that the last few games and stuff that we've seen some issues with, they haven't been able to get 7, 8, 9. I know last night 7 and 8 were a big problem. But I was just wondering if is there something I'm missing there? I'm trying to kind of feel like that why is the bottom of the lineup, like, because I was listening to you last night, you're like, well, here's the 212 hitter, and all of a sudden it's base hit, you know, and you're like I'm going, damn, you know, Jared's trying to tell us there's a possibility here that they can get a ground ball and play this thing. They're playing in the middle of the infield for two and that kind of stuff. And I just feel like, why is the bottom of the lineup killing me right now?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Maybe it's just his
no! Idea, but stop. No!
He went back.
No, he went back. All right, we started at 17. I thought the first question was going to end at 39. I thought it was over right there at 22. So is that the third or fourth time that he's and reapproached the question?
That was the third time he reapproached it.
Wow. Let's hear it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Maybe it's just this one game, but I just kind of felt like there's been other games where they just haven't gotten through that part.
Yeah.
Total time was a minute 16. Now, if you count Jared's, you know, little, he wanted to answer the question, the first five questions he was asked. So you could probably cut out about 7 or 8 seconds there. But yeah, Brian brought us, just wanted to keep talking, man.
G-Bag will tell you that's welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Daily Occurrence.
Welcome to the show.
I had my weekly phone call with brought us yesterday.
How'd that go? Did he interrupt a lot of times?
Well, I was going to get to that. What I do, I just power through it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I never know. And I'm guilty of interrupting as well. I try not to do it as much with questions. G-Bag somehow does a phenomenal job with 14 people in the room of not interrupting. Now, maybe some people aren't in the room. Maybe some people are not in the right frame of mind. Maybe some people are on the couch.
Some people have left the show. For the final hour.
Maybe. Screw you, Jared. Goodbye.
Yeah. So that makes interrupting a lot more difficult. But I've always said that to Broadus. I'm like, how do y'all not interrupt? It's like great chemistry. But man, that's an all-timer right there. But when I'm on the phone with Brian, I just decide I'm going to power through it.
Mm-hmm.
And he usually cedes the time over to me.
Yeah.
We'll change into my topic of discussion. So that's the way I do it. I don't know whether they try to power through him on air.
What are you damn talking about?
I mean, that's a lot.
That's a lot
of reapproaching these questions.
That's awesome. A minute 16. We may have to replay that.
Yeah.
With the KNC masterpiece at 9:40.
All right, let's head on over to South Carolina because this is something very near and dear to your and I hearts. Crinkle cut fries.
Yes. Love them.
I am of the opinion that they are. I think they're definitely a one seed of French fry. I think they hold the ketchup better. You know, the ridges.
Yeah.
The ridges will allow the ketchup to stay on.
Yeah.
You get a good crispy one. Now, if they're not crispy, very, very bad.
Yeah, too potatoey.
Too potatoey. But if they're crispy, they're phenomenal. Well, this burger chain in South Carolina is moving away from crinkle cut fries because the public did not want it anymore. The public went and basically bullied them online, cyberbullying. You know, Peyton, take their driver's license away for a year. the Tennessee state's doing. They were bullied into going back to their old fries. This is a huge miss. I will never take food advice from the great people of the Palmetto State ever again. South Carolina, you're off the list.
Yeah.
That Carolina barbecue now, I hope it's from North Carolina.
Yep.
And not South, because I like vinegar. But no more. No more after this. This is awful.
The skinny, like, shoestring fries, like, when these types of fries come, unless they're McDonald's, I don't even want them. Unless they're Whataburger, McDonald's type, I don't even want them. There's certain types of fries that I just give me the coleslaw instead, but the crinkle cut, I love them so much.
Yeah, especially if they're done right. If they're done right and they're nice and crispy.
Yeah.
You know, and
you can throw seasoning in there, like different types of spices, and it sits in the crinkle.
Right.
You know, it holds it well. Steak fries, it just bounces off and shoots everywhere, even though you and I like steak fries.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. You get steak fries with a prime rib, okay, and the juice gets all over. The steak fry soaks up the juice. Nobody has ever said that's too much potato. Right?
Well, if the crinkle cut fry I said is undercooked, it's too potatoey. It's too hard.
It's not soft enough. Right.
Yeah.
But the steak fries, especially when they get the juice, when they get the steak juice soaked in, oh, baby.
You want the Costco hack or JFK?
Let's go with JFK.
Okay.
So they have declassified a lot of these CIA documents.
Except
for the Epstein list. I don't even get me started on that one. But the CIA finally, after 60 years, got caught. They got caught because they have said for all this time, we never knew about Lee Harvey Oswald. We had no idea.
Man.
Well, George Joannides. This is a guy who was one of the number one operatives out there. This guy led the Miami branch. He oversaw all the stuff for dealing with Cuba and Castro. He had the alias Howard Glaber. Well, come to find out, he was not only knew about, but he was monitoring and in contact with Lee Harvey Oswald for years, months, leading up to the assassination of President Kennedy. This is huge. The fact that the CIA kind of is letting it be known that they knew who Lee Harvey was after 60 years of saying, we never knew.
I've never had less trust in the government.
We never knew. Never had less trust.
And I'm not even talking about this particular regime. So that's not a isolated shot that I'm trying to take. Just history and cover-ups. Yeah. And it makes me want to apologize to some of my conspiracy theory friends who I've made fun of for years.
Yep.
Because I'm considering an Alex Jones apology. I still don't want to. I'm not going to go there yet, but it makes me rethink everything.
Look, Alex blew it with Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
Right? He may have been right on some other things.
Yeah.
That completely killed any credibility he had. But there's conspiracy theories that I subscribe to. But okay, I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it like that. This one was sitting right in our face, front of our face.
Did a two-time batting champion just become available for the Texas Rangers? Choppy has it in Diamond Cavs on the official home of the Rangers with Sean and RJ next.